Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here for the next hour on a Saturday afternoon. With me is Tom Hsu, working the board.
Hello, Tom. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And, you know, we do a little humor bit or some news, but we had this conversation before the show started. I'll introduce my guest right away, Ron Rosenbaum, because we have so much to talk about. We may need 3 or 4 hours to get through all this material today.
That's a bad sign when you can't fit it into the hour, particularly when you've got some schmo like me on here, you know. Yeah, usually what they do is they get the hook after 10 minutes and fill it with music after that.
There's been times we've had music waiting in case the guest got so belligerent we might have had to switch to music.
That's why the theme song is 4 minutes long.
I understand.
Just
yeah.
in case
I get bored of the guest, we just I just walk out early. I do the Randy Moss thing, just get bored of playing and walk away.
What was that? It sounded like Minnesota polka music. I was just wondering what that theme song.
70s polka.
That's what it is.
You can okay. You can buy the flashback.
I'm one of the last people buying polka albums regularly. Do they still make them, by the way?
I don't know if Whoopi John's still around
Whoopi
or not.
Whoopi John will fart.
You know what? Yeah. We keep getting some here at the station every now and again. So
I'm sure
the number of Jews in history, by the way, that have polka'd is now zero. Okay? There's never been one.
Are you saying Rosenbaum's a Jewish name?
Well, that's what people say.
Okay. I like any sentence that starts with the number of Jews.
Fill in the blanks, right? Can be almost anything.
That's okay. It's always good to have legal counsel in case the FCC calls here at all times. Let's do a flashback to February. It's the last time we talked. It was about 15 below or 50 below. We've debated that. You did Newsapalooza, which was I thought it was a fun night, but then again, I organized it, so of course I think it's fun. But you were a willing participant.
I don't know if I'd say willing.
Yeah,
I showed up. It was below zero. I hate the cold, but I love Tom Osmond because no, this is the truth. He actually is kind of one of the last people around who really appreciates radio. You know, everybody's now, including me, by the way, doing podcasts and satellite, whatever. But the world of radio and old media, it's nice. I'm glad somebody's saving it.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, what I always enjoy, listening to your shows over the years is the same topics seem to come up over and over again. We've discussed ADS.
Some people have criticized me, by the way, that time and time again, it's always the same topics. That's why I have no listeners.
You can't get tired of stadiums, taxes.
I love self-deprecation.
Drunks. Criminal sexual conduct.
You know, who's
you name
stuff.
It.
Which politician is being hypocritical this week?
The politicians all hate me. That's one thing I pride myself on. But they all want to be on. It's absolutely amazing.
So you're trying to just beat them off the door because they're trying to get on your new podcast, right? Which is Holding Court with Ron Rosenbaum and Lucy Quinlan, which you can download on iTunes or
and please do. I need all the damn downloads I can get. The only reason I'm here is to plug my podcast. I'm acting like I'm helping Tom out, but holdingcourtpodcast.com. No, seriously. I'm just teasing, but it's we'll get into it later, but the world of podcasting is one I'm just learning. I worked in radio for 17, 18, 19 years, and the world of podcasting is new to me.
Well, what's amazing about podcasting, and I think that this is what distinguishes some of the good ones from the bad ones, is you have to know a little bit about radio, but also what's your product, and also because it's much like doing film or video now. Everyone has a camera that would cost thousands of dollars 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and they can make an HD movie. But are you able to make a movie someone wants to watch?
I didn't want to get into it that quickly, but you are exactly right. And this is one of the things that bothers me about podcasting. Radio is the greatest medium. I love radio. I respect it. I appreciate it. I respect people that do it. And for some reason, I don't know what it is about radio. Everybody thinks I can do radio. Hey, yeah, you just go in front of the microphone and you have fun. Listen to some of the people that you think are having fun. It's absolutely like dying. What's the old line? Death is easy, comedy is hard. Well, that's sort of about radio. And that is one of the frustrating things to me about podcasting, that because everybody can do it, They think they can do it, and I will be damned if these people are going to get an audience, because radio is – I mean, you have to have skills, but it is a learned business.
And we've yet to measure, I think, in the podcast world, which, by the way, you can podcast Flashback Twin Cities also on iTunes, or you can just listen at the KLBB.com website.
KLBBradio.com, and click on the audio on demand to get all of the podcasts, the various shows that we have here.
But let's distinguish – podcasting from podcasting.
Good point.
I do the Dan Barrero show every Thursday at 5:20. Dan Barrero, to me, is a huge radio talent and a friend. I'm not just saying that because he's a friend. I think it's a great show. But every day that show then is put on to the website as a podcast. Mm-hmm. But all it is, Tom, is the same
rebroadcast
show.
On the radio. Right.
We're trying to do literally a separate world of podcasting. I'm on, and I'm proud to be on the Tom Bernard Network. And if you listen to Tom's morning show, which is, you know, always been popular, it's one show. But the afternoon podcast is very different. And that takes a lot of skill. And it's one I'm learning by doing. But I don't pretend to be an expert on podcasting because it's different. Plus, there's no FCC regulation. So everybody all gets, you know, people get excited. Now I can use the F word. I can use whatever word they want, and nobody cares. But that doesn't mean it's good.
And just from the next hour, we are under FCC regulation still. So we can put in the swear words after this for the rebroadcast.
Yeah, once it goes online, I'll be putting in some of the worst things you've ever heard.
Maybe a couple of challenges. And
just a stream.
But it is important people understand the difference, because now every station, I think, Tom, everybody puts their shows onto podcasting so that people can listen to them later. But a separate podcast, which is only for the internet, is a different animal.
Well, also, the one challenge I had even finding your show, and by the way, if you type in Holding Court Ron Rosenbaum, it will pop up. It's sometimes tough to find just these. There's so many millions. I believe there'd be millions because there's so many people in the world that are now radio experts or podcast experts. There's so many podcasts out there. And, you know, you can get – I don't know about you, but I don't have so much time in the day to be able to listen to all this audio. That includes the, you know, 100 emails and, of course, all the fan letters I get here. But it's tough to distinguish.
I saw that. There was a whole room full of fan letters.
Right. It's, you know,
there.
Santa Claus and me.
But they were all signed by you, which made me a little bit suspect.
Yeah, there's a scam going on there, too.
We'll get I understand. Later.
But, you know, there's so much – it's much like the internet. There's so much content out there is, you know, what's your audience? And then what what's your product? I've actually enjoyed – you had Tommy Mischke on last week, and you had Joe Friedberg on the week before. I've enjoyed the local talent they've had on there discussing local issues. You had the, you know, former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court on your podcast.
Eric Magnuson. Yeah, I mean, we can – I was shut. We're on iTunes. And if you want to go on iTunes and go to – you apparently automatically download the podcast app and you can find us at Holding Court. But I was shocked up how many podcasts there are. Mm-hmm. It's actually a whole world of thousands of podcasts, and I'm not sure who's listening to this, but I have a hunch it's young people only because I don't think most people older even know how to do it.
Well, you know, there is a learning curve, and I think that anyone with, you know, everyone has smartphones now, even people that you wouldn't think are smartphone savvy. I mean, don't mean any disrespect to any particular group of people from the show, but, you know, it all depends on what you've had your whole life, and, you know, for me, I've been always a tech savvy my whole life, so I can hit a few buttons, or at least I Google a way to figure out what I don't know. I think with others, sometimes there's more of a learning curve to get that information. And once they get it on their phone, they can listen to it, they can enjoy it. But there's a learning curve to that.
It's a question of patience. Mm-hmm. Do you have the time to do it without feeling like an idiot?
Right.
But it's also generational. I mean, I have a 94-year-old mother. She was always kind of mentally ill to begin with. But no, I mean, I'm proud of the fact that my 94-year-old mother, we spent hours and I sort of taught her how to use an iPhone and whatever. But she was just flummoxed as far as how to get the podcast. Not that she was that interested in the first place, but she literally struggled and you know, we finally figured it out. But, you know, people that are in their 70s and 80s and 90s who didn't grow up with these machines, it's not just patience. They really are intimidated to a large extent by a lot of this.
Well, they
stuff.
Didn't grow up with TV.
Right.
I mean, think of the. I look at, you know, okay, we cable was a big discovery, you know, when I was young, but this generation, you know, two before us, if you couldn't afford a TV, which most people couldn't afford a TV until late in the 50s.
All way post-World War II.
And now we're trying – now we want them to get audio out of a little square box in their hand and
– Well, I'm old enough. I'm not going to brag about it, but I'm old enough where there was TV only a fairly small part of the day. There were test patterns. It didn't start early in the morning. And none of this remote control, whatever. I mean, these were big machines if you had TV. Mm-hmm. And they were even then relatively expensive. You know, they had wood around them and the whole deal. And they were not mobile machines. And, you know, you just manually, nobody ever thought about it, but that's how you manually change stations. And you think of where we are now. When is the last time you saw a television that was changed manually? I guarantee you, I haven't seen one in 20 years.
Or one you have to hit the dials, you know, press the
right.
You tell your kids how to like go up there and hit 09. That's what you had to do. There was no remote. We had this wood console TV until not too long ago at home, and it was a piece of furniture. Pictures
but
on
radio
it.
Is the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, radio, there wasn't FM when I was growing up. Then there was FM. It took a long time for that to reach the dial on a car. Someday, and I don't think you know more about this than I do, I don't think it's going to be in the distant future where you'll be able to do on your radio dial podcasting and the mm-hmm. internet with numbers. I don't think you can do it yet.
No,
you?
I think it's coming, though. I think that you see right now the internet is being integrated into vehicles, which is a frightening thought to begin with. You have, you know, an internet console on your dashboard. But I think that you know, Samsung and Apple, these companies are trying to integrate themselves into vehicles now.
Well, it'll all come along with HD radio when you have so many different channels that you can listen to and it's all satellite fed. You could absolutely have podcasts. You could have anything you really wanted to listen to.
By the way, I like when you're driving the freeway, when you look over at someone, they have like a TV screen in their vehicle and they're watching a movie while they're trying to drive.
That's the guy that's going three lanes across the highway, just absolutely captivated by the show that's on TV. I'm not kidding you. This stuff is dangerous in terms of distracted driving. I mean, Minnesotans are right. People from Wisconsin have no clue how to drive anyway. So
no.
There's no – they shouldn't even really be allowed to drive, let alone have all these things.
And we are home of the Green Bay Packers here, so I, you know, do apologize to our Wisconsin.
I don't apologize. I'm very direct about it. People from – I see a Wisconsin license plate and I immediately pull over.
That's okay. Their revenge to us is when we cross the border, that we go 1 mile of the speed limit, then we have the you know, the exactly.
Had that happen.
Recently?
No, years ago. Totally got me for 2 miles
more
over.
More than once. Our guest today, Ron Rosenbaum, I want to just take a left turn here, and I want to come back to this podcast conversation, but a big story in the news the last couple of weeks, and I have an opinion on this, and I want to get your take on it, is the Jesse Ventura lawsuit over American Sniper. And I think a lot of people didn't give this case much credit, and I know you still don't give it a lot of faith that it's going to go forward. But you know, Jesse seems to be, and he doesn't have discount lawyers, you know, in town here. These are some top notch.
That's your opinion.
Well, it's what I read. I don't take.
I think Kyle has top notch lawyers. Being a First Amendment lawyer and trying a major defamation case takes a certain amount of skill. I'm not going to knock Jesse's lawyers, but I don't think they're in the ballpark with Kyle's lawyers.
Interesting. You know, the question is why, you know, do you believe that Jesse is he's never been, you know, I'm not necessarily a fan of his politics or his governing. I think that he had a great opportunity in the state and maybe squandered it, we'll say. This is the bullspin of him this show before. But he never seemed to be one that has made a lot of, you know, made up stories or lied. It seems to me that he's very intent on this being – on him being – you know, this being right. And I think the Mishke said on your show that he can believe everything that's happened, including getting punched out, until the comment he made about losing a few people, you know, to the war. Do you think that to Jesse that regardless – if he loses all his money, if he goes down in flames on this, being right's that important to him?
Well, there's two different levels. One is the legal standard, which is amazingly high, which I'm going to talk about secondarily. But let's talk about Jesse first. A, I like Jesse. Okay, a lot of people don't. I personally like Jesse. I had a lot of dealings with him when I was on the radio. I had him often as a guest. I ran into him, and I even did his TV show a few times. So it's not a personal animus with Jesse. But the problem is for Jesse, and this came out in this week's cross-examination, Jesse has made publicly many comments almost the same as the one that he's suing about. He's called the United States fascist. I think he's called – I'm not sure, but I think he's said some derogatory things about the SEALs, that they were trained killers, something to that effect. I don't want to say exactly because I can't remember exactly, that he's no longer patriotic, that George Bush and others were in on the 9/11
war criminals. Right, right.
All of these things are really not so different than the comment that he's suing about. And I agree with you and I agree with Tommy that saying that you SEALs deserve to lose a few is about as bad a comment as you can make. The problem is this. If you are a public figure, and Jesse is a public figure, in the United States, and you sue a media outlet, and is it Harper's, whoever the
yep, right.
The
publisher is, this
publisher is right. of the book. It's a media outlet. You are granted special protection, the defendants, pursuant to the United States Supreme Court in a decision in the 60s called New York Times versus Sullivan. It's very important for guys like us because it gives guys like us in the media a huge amount of protection. Normal defamation. What's defamation? Defamation is simply a false statement that harms your reputation. Normally, so I sue a guy, he said, you know, you were convicted of dealing drugs in 1975. That's arguably provable being true or false. It never happened. It hurts my reputation. I win a defamation suit. But if you sue a media figure, if you are a media figure and you sue, if you're a public figure and you sue the media, you have to get what's called New York Times defamation standard, which you not only have to show that it was false and that you suffered damages. You have to show that either the defendant, in this case Kyle, knew it was false when he said it. In other words, he deliberately lied or that he recklessly disregarded the truth. It's almost impossible. It doesn't happen. Plaintiffs, people who bring the case, don't win one out of 100 cases like that. And in Jesse's case, I don't think we're ever going to know for sure exactly what happened in that bar. John Borger, who is the attorney for Kyle, said he's going to produce witnesses. Nobody saw everything, but he's going to, according to him, he promised the jury, and it's not a good idea to promise what you can't deliver, promised the jury that he will be able to produce witnesses that saw, piece this thing together. All of them saw either a piece of the confrontation, the actual comment made by Jesse. And I don't know how Jesse can win on those facts, even if, in fact, Kyle is lying. Kyle's dead now, but his family.
Do you have faith in the jury system that they're – I mean, because this jury could be consisting of Minnesota people who see the former governor as being persecuted by this guy who –
By the way, this guy's a national hero for what it's worth.
He's the
number one sniper, Navy SEAL – it's a best-selling book, the one that we're talking about. I think American Sniper. Mm-hmm. This is the defendant.
And it sold more books after Jesse made his lawsuit.
And more sympathy because this guy then was murdered by a guy that he was trying to help out right. who had some, post-traumatic syndrome mm-hmm. problems. So even more of a hero. So now it kind of looks to the jury, I think, that Jesse, rather than going after the guy, is literally trying to harm the widow. So mm-hmm. the sympathies, which might have been with Jesse, I think are not. And I think the law is not with him. I've talked to lawyers that know more about this area of the law than I do. All of them question whether Jesse really expects to win.
Well, we got... Let's take a little quick break here. I want to talk about more about this Jesse Ventura lawsuit with Ron Rosenbaum here. We'll take a quick break here in Flashback Twin Cities here on KLDB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest Ron Rosenbaum. Talk a little bit about the Jesse Ventura lawsuit against the estate, or I guess the of Chris Kyle, American Sniper. In Jesky's lawsuit, I think City Pages was able to pick up some of the information on this. The one part I did laugh a little bit to myself was when he said he wasn't able to get work anymore because of this book. And I think that Jesky, for at least the last few years, has been working on not getting work for a long time, creating a media persona, which might be good for one of the talking heads on one of the news channels occasionally. But his books and his conspiracy theory shows, they haven't picked up – they haven't got much steam. I don't know if American Sniper had anything to do with that or not.
Well, you know, if you listen to Jesky, it had everything to do with it. He testimony came out this week that he was making somewhere around $700,000 when he was the governor. By the way, listed his occupation as entertainer.
Oh.
This cuts against Jesky, okay, as does his television show on conspiracy. It's and as does the fact that he was a professional wrestler, all of which worlds are sort of based on, you know, a lot of BS, okay? Everybody knows wrestling is fake. Everybody knows Jesky would go overboard on these conspiracies. And all of this hurts him in terms of the credibility, but it also hurts him. Part of defamation is you have to have your reputation be harmed. To the extent that he said the government is a fascist government, he's no longer patriotic. Bush knew about 9/11, things that the vast majority of people in America do not believe. You know, in order to have damages, you have to have a reputation that's been harmed. I think all that cuts against Jesky, even if he could meet the standard, which I think he can't. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I've gone way out on the limb. I can't remember what I told Tommy Mischke, but I think I probably told him the odds are about 20-1, and I think that's generous of Jesky winning. Hey, listen, I got no dog in this fight, but that's the way it looks to me. And again, personally, I like Jesky. I'm not critical of what he was as a governor. As a lawyer, I loved the judges that he put on the bench. He was absolutely not political. He played it, you know, down the middle.
Well, you know, my challenge against the politics show we do here, I think that Jesse Ventura, even when he was making controversial comments that first year in office, he had like a 60% approval rating. He had every opportunity to really – I mean, he could have been governor for three terms. He became so infatuated not only with himself but the media, which actually created the – I mean, he's James Janos. The media created Jesse Ventura, cameras and action and drama. And yet I don't think he was able ever to escape it, but he wanted to escape it. It doesn't make sense because
– Well, he played it both ways.
Right.
He was a creature of the media and he and by the way, he wasn't kidding. He deeply resented the media. He viewed the media as their – literally to praise Jesse Ventura. And he has if there's a major criticism about Jesse, and I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know, he's the most thin-skinned guy I've ever seen. Where you think he's doing stuff just put on and kind of tongue-in-cheek, he's not. He is absolutely serious.
And if you would have been able to get – I remember at his inauguration, someone asked him about his – singing or dancing or something, and he got really upset. And from that point forward, it just a downward spiral of, you know, the reporters knew how to irk him too. They knew the right questions. And then I think that a lot of times reporters didn't even ask him a lot of tough questions. I think they were afraid to get his –
Well, you remember the famous where he had him wear media
jackals, right.
Buttons. And then what he got famously thin-skinned about was his son and the idea about his son having parties. I mean, Jesky could have been – remember the period. This was the 9/11 period. And I agree with you. Jesky could have been monstrously popular as he was when he was elected. There was the famous moment, one of the greatest Jesky Ventura moments. It's probably on YouTube when he was debating – Hubert Humphrey and Norm Coleman.
Right.
Both of whom look like corpses, okay? And there was a moment when they were talking about a same-sex couple and not being able to, because of the law, not being able to visit their loved one when they were dying. And Jesky gave the most human response. And I think that was the moment when he won. And he deserved to win, but boy, was he thin-skinned, and he became, in my opinion, his own worst enemy.
I mean, in knowing him, another question that on your podcast, on the Ron Rosenbaum Holding Court podcast, which I'll keep promoting for you today, the question was, are media people what they are off camera, off mic?
We were talking about radio people.
Radio people. Was Jesky the same person when you dealt with him off air as he was on air?
Yeah, actually, I think he was, and that was the irony. Everybody thought Jesse, remember he was wearing the boa feathers and had the Warren Zevon, and, you know, and everybody of my generation, we were all big Warren Zevon. We thought, this is cool, this is fun, this is tongue-in-cheek. But he took himself so friggin' seriously that, to a certain extent, if you'd see him walking around the radio studio, he let the littlest things, I mean, most... Well, let me put it to you. Are you the same on air or off air?
90%, I think. I'm actually much
probably.
More polite on air than I am off air.
Say that again?
I'm much more polite on air than I am off air. No,
aren't we all?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I don't really know how to be another character, but it's true that a lot of people are. Many radio people, and I'm sure you've interviewed all of them, are really introverted in real life until they get in front of a microphone. It's kind of interesting.
No, in fact, you guys are talking about Tom Bernard. I remember I met Tom Bernard at an event one time, and I was kind of just talking a little bit, and he was very polite and very, very nice, but you could tell he didn't really have a lot of fire, and he didn't really want to get into it, which is the opposite, I think, people think listening to him for 4 hours a day, you know, going to work, that you see this angry or he's passionate or he's joking around. Much different.
Yeah, I do have a dog in this fight.
You do.
Tom is not only my friend, he's my client. But I wish a lot of, particularly people that don't like him, could see him in real life. He's kind of a teddy bear. I mean, he's quiet and he's respectful and he takes particular umbrage, as do I, by the way, when waitresses are treated badly or when janitors are treated badly. People that the world views as sort of not terribly important people, where they'll kiss the behinds of celebrities and then treat other people badly. He's particularly sensitive to that, and he's very different than he is on the air.
And then with Tom, and someday we'll get Tom on this chair someday. But someday.
Good luck with that, driving out to Stillwater.
However, well, we'll do it on the phone. But, you know, he comes from nothing. And I think that, you know, I'm just based on what he's told and what I've read. You know, he comes from nothing. I think that the success story of what he's been able to accomplish, you know, that's really amazing. I think that, you know, for a person that, you know, grew up in some really tough, you know, kind of tough hand he was dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, he's an American success story. There's no question. But you never totally get beyond what you were. Now, we didn't grow up in my neighborhood. Not a terribly wealthy neighborhood. People weren't poor. It was a post-generation. Everybody came back from the war. And but I think Tom was a cut below that. Mm-hmm. And like everybody, you get a certain chip on your shoulder because the world, part of it is, if you remember that show, we were talking about celebrity. Mm-hmm. Celebrity is really an odd thing. Tommy and I were talking about what's a celebrity, and people will come up to me, which is laughable on its face, and say, you know, how does it feel to be a celebrity? And my standard answer is, Bruce Springsteen's a friggin' celebrity. Mick Jagger's a friggin' celebrity. I do a little radio show. But they still treat you different and in some ways better than they do regular people, which is, to me, irritating and bizarre.
You live in Boston. I lived in Chicago. I've been to LA many times, been to New York many times. There's something different about being a media personality or being on the air in Minneapolis, St. Paul than there is other big cities. And that's why this show exists, because I think people are genuinely interested in their stories. I also think that because of the accessibility, we're in the middle of we're in flyover land. So the closest thing, if you see Paul Majors at a restaurant some night, you're going to get smitten by that.
That's like seeing Mick Jagger.
That's right. And how many autographs do you sign a day?
I'll tell you one thing. I don't sign any, but it's really bizarre. When I worked for KSTP, we used to do this.
The state fair thing.
And we all be sitting. I mean, we were like, I was going to say trained monkeys. We were like untrained monkeys sitting on the stage. And then there'd be breaks and people would ask you for your autograph. And I was genuinely perplexed. What in God's name do you want my autograph for? I mean, I can see, you know, you want Harmon Killebrew's autograph or you want Mickey Mantle's. The hell do you want my autograph? But it's the old, in the land of the blind, the Cyclops is king. Mm-hmm. And we are not a town that has a number of huge celebrities. And, you know, even if you're as likely to be asked for an autograph as I am, Tom.
Well, we'll wait for that day to happen, right? I think Tom signs more autographs than I ever.
Do you broadcast live at the fair?
No, we do not, but we do broadcast live when the fair is going on. If that.
Well, the reason I add, that's like the fair once removed. It's like a first cousin once removed. Yeah.
We talk about the fair occasionally. The fair.
Well, for years, I broadcast live at the fair, and it's really one of the stranger experiences you've ever seen because you know, you'll be on the air and people go, where do you get Pronto Pups? You know, it makes no difference to them you're on the air. But it's just, it's an odd experience because radio is meant to be done literally in the dark where people can't see you rather than, you know, like television where, you know, people can.
What I always get worried about for people at the fair broadcasting from there is some knucklehead in the back is just going to start swearing, just screaming obscenities.
That's good radio. What are you talking about? Yeah, you're hoping for that guy. No, you name it, I've had it because for years we did 12 days of broadcasting. And the late, great Mark O'Connell, who was like a brother to me, was my radio partner for many years at KSTV. We used to do, you know, 8 o'clock to 11:30. And, you know, there were the drunks and there were the hookers and there were the people
at 8 a.m.
swearing. Well, it had been left over from the night before.
It's a rough night.
Yeah. And then it was a great, right after September 11th when the fair put on their big security, it was really pretty funny because you're driving and go, you got anything in your trunk? You go, no, okay, you go right through. So that was their notion of security because, of course, if you were a terrorist and they asked you if you had anything in your trunk, of course, you go, yeah, you got me now. I got have explosives. How'd you know? We played at security.
I remember I went to Maplewood Mall not long after 9/11. I remember the security that I had to get in just to go to Sears that day, you know, about a week after 9/11 happened. It was, and that was a thing for a while. I think that some places like Mall of America still have that. I had my vehicle swabbed going to Mall of America maybe about 3 months ago to an event. I had to go, you know, behind the scenes to the loading dock. So I think I went through three security checkpoints before.
Really?
Maplewood
Mall?
This is the Mall of America this year.
Oh.
This,
I know the bus there and the shuttles have the guy with the mirror that still looks underneath, but I haven't seen any cars.
This
going
one I was
that.
doing some audio for an event, and I had to go through three security checkpoints. I had to sign paperwork. I had to literally they swab my vehicle.
Are really pretty dumb when it comes to security. Do you remember? Because I was on the radio at the time when there was a big thing about people need to put duct tape on.
Oh, right, yep.
And there were people like in Burnsville and Anoka and Barnesville putting duct tape. I said, you know.
Putting duct tape?
I really wouldn't worry about it. You know, I don't think Barnesville is on the mind of the terrorists.
This was,
point.
Well, you know, and honestly, our governor thought he was the next target of terrorism.
Oh, if you've ever actually been there, I've had the great experience of covering some of these places that were in the middle of actual terror. They handle things completely different. The people are much more relaxed. The people actually understand what the threat is. But part of it is this is all stuff that Americans really, almost to the exclusion of the whole world, are not used to. I mean, World War I was not fought here. World War II was not fought here. The War on Terror. Now, granted, we had the greatest terror incident of all time, September 11th. But it didn't happen in Barnesville. You know, it happened where you would expect it to happen, which is New York City.
You were talking on your podcast. I want to actually revisit this topic again. Is you had the privilege, or I'll say the disprivileged ones, of having dinner with one of the biggest radio personalities ever. Was it Rush Limbaugh, I think? And you're talking about.
I did.
And actually.
It wasn't me and Rush. I mean, don't get carried away.
I picture you.
But it was a small group.
But this wasn't the Sean Hannity event. This is a different event, correct? Because I remember.
Sean Hannity was a different event. Sean Hannity broadcast to a big. At St. Catharines to a big auditorium. Rush, it was a private little dinner. It's not like I was there because I was a fan of Rush. I was there because I was on the air and about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes.
How did you keep yourself from interrupting him and giving debate?
Well, no, you couldn't interrupt him. The guy got up and, you know, he sort of looks like Humpty Dumpty. You know, he's big and rotund and full of himself and pasty and balding and 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 this was at a small room at the St. Paul Hotel. And, you know, the one thing I've learned, every now and then I give speeches. God only knows when they want me to give speeches, but I do every now and then. And the one thing I've learned is the best speech is a short one. Rush, I think, honestly, this is after dinner. Everybody had like 97 drinks, probably. I can't remember if Rush had as well, but I think he spoke for like 2 to 2.5 hours. Honest to God. It was like, you know, I kept sticking needles in my forehead because it was less painful than the speech. So that was my brush with greatness. And, of course, our show was right before Rush.
Right. You're his leading.
Which was literally the equivalent of singing rock and roll on a country station. You know, we had
yourself, then Rush, Suchere, Lewis.
We had a right-wing morning guy. We had Rush. We had Hannity. We had Jason Lewis. And then we had O'Connell and I, who didn't fit that category at all. And God bless the Hubbards for letting us do it. I don't know. I'm actually a big fan of the Hubbards. They were very good to me. But, you know, I mean, it's no secret. Stanley, the old man, who I love, by the way. I love Stanley Hubbard. He and I couldn't disagree on whether it was Tuesday or Saturday, but I really respected him because he was a real broadcaster. Mm-hmm. He let guys like me say what we wanted to say, and he never tried to censor us. And I really respect
him. Well, I think he appreciates a good argument. I think from what I understand, people that have been in this chair in the past have said Stanley Hubbard.
I agree with that.
He appreciates a good argument. He appreciates someone that will actually have the guts to go up to him and say, here's what I think and why.
Well, this guy, by the way, who, you know, was wealthier than all of us in this room times a million, was at work every day at 8:30 in the morning, mm-hmm, with his gray pants and his blue sport coat. And if you wanted to go see him, you went to his office. You didn't go through six secretaries. You didn't have to set up his people. Of course, I didn't have any people, but he was just – I respected the hell out of him.
The Hubbard family is not in the museum of broadcasting by just inheriting a station. I mean, we were talking before the show started. You know, he created DirecTV.
Absolutely. Took, the family risked everything on satellite. They were ahead of the game.
But and then back to your hand. I actually saw the Hannity event when you guys were at, being Hannitized with you and Chris Kroc, your other friend, over on stage.
That's the guy I threatened on stage once, by the way, at the state fair.
I believe.
It's kind of a famous incident now.
To tell the incident, because everyone here listens to the All Request Lunch Hour. They don't listen to Rush Limbaugh or his other syndicated shows. They listen to Stan Turner at noon. So we can talk about those past personalities that have moved on.
Well,
to
Chris
Kroc,
I don't remember. Super Talk is what they called this horror show, an event that we were. So there'd be me and Mischke and Jason Lewis and Patrick Royce and this Chris Kroc. And I don't know. I said something and he gave the, can I use the word? The sort of masturbating symbol to the crowd. And it was a pretty big crowd. And I went over and whispered to him that, I won't go into the exact language, but it was some of the effect of, he might be missing certain bodily parts if that such a thing ever happened again. And I think I stage whispered loud enough that a number of people heard it.
He's gone to.
It was well deserved.
I think he's in Alabama now. I think he's gone to greater and bigger things. So you trained him
those
well.
Those giant markets down in Alabama.
You trained him well, Ron.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little more about the podcast network. So you're part of the Tom Bernard Radio Network. So your show airs live, and also you can podcast it
24/7. It's easy to find as holdingcourtpodcast.com is our website, but you can also get it through iTunes. And there's four or five different shows on the Tom Bernard Network. Where Tom's, I think it's 4 days a week, is his show. And probably once a week I appear on Tom's show. It's, it's another learning experience for me, Tom. I'm used to radio and mm-hmm. You know, somebody said, what kind of an idiot are you talking to me? Why are you giving the time? 95% of the people listen to podcasts later, but it's a generational thing, and it's not something I was sort of born knowing, and I'm learning how to do it.
Well, that's one of those things that even at Brown College, they teach you that if you're in radio, don't podcast your show, because what happens is people don't tune into the show itself and your advertisers don't get listened to.
Well, except that now they've learned that and now they have literally separate – you go to the website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean I have advertisers on my podcast. There are – I think – I'm not sure, but I think there are separate advertisers for the Dan Barrero show on the podcast than there are on regular. And so – and let me tell you one thing
about – But can you skip them?
Pardon me?
Can you skip those commercials? Like, just go ahead to the
next? You can. I mean, not much like DVR or anything else, you can still skip them if you're downloading.
You skip them on television now. No, I'm not being facetious. No, you can. I mean, you can skip through them. But it's a situation that it's really different than radio. Part of it is there's no FCC. So, you know, a lot of people literally think it's great to have a lot of profanity on their show. I'm not one of them. Mm-hmm. But,
well, I think satellite radio, I think like when Howard Stern went to satellite radio, his big draw was, oh, I can swear all I want now. And occasionally that's what
Do you know
happens.
How that show is doing? Because I don't.
You know, I've not heard about it in a long time. I think he signed on for another few years. It made him a multimillionaire, that deal.
Oh, I think he got like $400 or $500 million.
Oh, right,
from,
right.
DirecTV. By the way, for what it's worth, he is a monster talent in radio. People think it's just talking dirty, but let me tell you, he's as good. I always thought Steve Cannon was sort of the master of radio. Nobody was more skilled at radio than Steve Cannon, but I think Howard Stern is right up there. I think same Tom Bernard, by the way.
I've come around to that. I think that because I had satellite radio in my car, so I'd pop on that Howard Stern channel, and you know, it's kind of like Tom Bernard. If you hear 2 minutes of it your whole life, you're going to have that 2 minute opinion. And Howard Stern, I have this opinion of disgusting, crude, because there is parts of the show which are disgusting
the
and crude.
The best interviewer on radio.
That's it. He can do an interview for an hour.
He is a genius. He can have the most uninteresting person on there and make their life sound fascinating.
And he also does what a lot of interviewers won't do, is make them a little bit uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And you look, and compared to late night shows, or compared to even, you know, some of these, you know, kind of cupcake, like you know, he'll ask questions that people want to know, but they're not willing to
that
ask.
That was the brilliance of David Letterman, by the way. People didn't really understand. I mean, he was a stand-up comedian. People didn't know what a great interviewer he was, because he would go where it made people feel uncomfortable. He did that more in the late night show than he does on the show now. Mm-hmm. But he still knows how to stick the knife in with a smile.
Well, remember this, the quote Cher made him, which we can't send the air, but she didn't want to do the show because they thought he was a jerk.
Right.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back here in Flashback Twin Cities with some more with Ron Rosenbaum on KLEB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest Ron Rosenbaum, talking about the podcast world, Jesse Ventura, media celebrities.
You know, I had a guy who worked for, I had a client who worked for this station many years ago. Maybe one of the more famous KLBB personalities, Bob Yates.
I'm not sure if Tom's aware of him, but I know Bob Yates.
Oh, I'm aware of Bob.
Okay, okay.
I started representing him when he got fired at
KFAN.
At KSTP.
That's right.
Then we got him hired at KFAN. Then he got fired at KFAN. Then he got hired at KFAN. I think in between he was working at KLBB.
This station was once one of those conservative stations at one point. This was
Bob was not conservative.
No, but this was
he was crazy, but he wasn't conservative.
And you want conservatives to call your show, right? You want call-ins at the Ron Rosenbaum podcast, correct?
I love talking to call-ins. It's one thing I miss about talk radio, because there's no better day than when somebody says, "You are the biggest idiot I've ever." I just, honest to God, it makes my day.
Where is your followers? You've had, where's Kelly, and where's that group that called you from every station, every show you've been on? Where are they?
They are now texting and Facebooking me and tweeting me. And
I mean, you got me. That's all. I mean, I'm, you know, texting you.
I mean, I don't know. I love callers in real time. I'm old fashioned in that way. I mean, people want to tweet, and it's not just Facebook posting. They want to send you Facebook messages privately. You know, call. I mean, it's just to me, it's fun. I used to love doing battle with the callers. Mm-hmm. It really was mm-hmm. nothing but fun. And you know, I don't know how. Most of them ended up actually friendly. I really, you know. I'm a guy you could easily dislike. I didn't really understand.
My brother's a blast time. I don't think she's not a public figure anymore.
Who's this?
2004, during one of the congressional elections. And the person that was running against Betty McCollum, I was listening to you and Mark's show, and you were being very honestly critical of one of the congressional candidates.
Me?
Well,
that's hard to believe.
And you probably remember. You probably remember this. She called in to the show.
Yeah.
And then she had no answers for any questions you asked her. Now, that would be the first sign this might not be a good idea. So what does she do then, Tom? She calls back a second time.
Right. Oh, to refresh.
Now, this is before the podcast world, but remember on the KSV website at the time, this was such a popular segment that you guys put the audio on demand. It must have been such a popular requested bit for this congressional candidate.
Well, me and politicians really didn't always mix. I'm the only guy, I think, that Walter Mondale hung up on.
That's
how we used to end our show, by the way. Any click.
What made Walter so mad?
I don't know. Politicians do not like to be asked hard questions. And my attitude is, I'm no big fan of politicians. If I'm going to have them on the show, I'm not there to kiss their behinds. I can't remember, it was some guy, it was a gun bill that he was pushing in the legislature. And he really made the mistake of coming on the show. And he not only didn't understand the law, he didn't understand his own legislation. And that was fun. I used to have Michelle Bachmann on.
That's right.
On occasion,
she's not afraid of media. I mean, she'll go up there and she'll
she
answer.
Was smarter than I was. Let me tell you, if you thought you had her cornered, she had you cornered. But I did get her to say, which I've quoted many times, that same-sex marriage, the fear of same-sex marriage is the most important issue in the whole United States. I don't think she'd say that today.
Probably not today. And you don't hear anything about her anymore. Now that she's stepped down. And
where's she going to go, by the way? What do you think? I don't think she's going to disappear into that good night. That's
I don't know.
Tom,
do we got a slot here for her? Is she going to be on the...
Well, we got the 10 to 11.
That's right. So.
I'd love to hear her playing like old polka music on KLBB on Saturdays. I would listen to that, by the
What's
way.
What's her husband's name? They'll co-host us. They'll do a podcast. I think they're going to be on the Tom Bernard Network.
What is his name?
Well, anyway, he's got his camp. You know, they're happy.
He's kind of not the real deal, but yeah, go ahead.
I just remembered when we had Tom Mischke in here, we played an audio clip from that show of somebody who was discussing you.
Oh, that's right.
And he was not a fan.
Remember Tom when Mischke called you at home? And
what did they say?
Well, can't air it.
We aired it. We shouldn't have aired it, but it's on the internet. But
they had called me at home?
Called you at home because a guy called in a Mischke show complaining about you. So Mischke does what any radio guy would do, call you at home and have you on the air for
hang on the line. I want to get Ron on here. Let's have a conversation.
That's pretty good.
That's on
he hung up.
He did.
How weird.
Madness of Mischke. It's a great website. You get a lot of great Mischke.
See, I was in charge of discipline at South Boston High School during the violent busing days. I dealt with Whitey Bulger and Billy Bulger, and I got shot. Once you do that, you know, talk radio callers, that's kind of like minor league stuff.
But did you have ever politicians that said, okay, you can only ask this and not this?
And they didn't come on.
That's right.
Okay. That had no interest to me. And if I did agree to that, then I violated the agreement on the air. But I never really double dealt with people, but I did not allow politicians to set the agenda. Because I didn't really care, and I don't care now.
I think you're the only debate between then-Sheriff Fletcher and Chief Finney, I think, right?
That was the most violent debate. People don't remember. This was live at the Minnesota State Fair. Joe Freberg and I literally had to keep Amy Klobuchar and Cheryl Ramstead Voss from killing each other, each one grabbing the mic from us. This was when Amy was running.
For U.S. Senate?
No, Hennepin County Attorney. It was really, I mean, it was, if you like cat fights, this was
a cat fight. I was trying to picture Mark Kennedy and Amy Klobuchar having a big brawl, but that didn't happen then, right?
I had a good time with Mark Kennedy, too. He was another guy that didn't understand the bills he was offering.
And where's he today?
I wish more radio people would do this. They seem to think, God, you got Al Franken on. I got to treat him like he's.
Well, Barrera did pretty well at that, didn't he? When he had Al Franken on a couple years ago.
Yeah, he got mad. Frankie got mad at me, too, but he got mad at Barrero. Barrero's pretty acid when he wants to be. Barrero doesn't kiss anybody's behind, either.
And Franken also, he gets a little thin-skinned sometimes, right?
God, in a second.
I mean,
you think
Ventura.
A guy who's a professional comedian, but, you know, he does.
Hey, everyone's an entertainer until you're entertaining off them, right?
Pardon me?
Everyone's entertaining until you're entertaining off them.
Comedians often have the worst attitude, by the way.
Yeah, just
I love them, but they often do. I'm a big Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld.
Well, and they all podcast now. And again, Holding Court, Ron Rosenbaum, and Lucy Quinlan.
Holding FallenCourtPodcast.com.
FallenCourtPodcast.com.
Even if you don't listen to it, download. I need the downloads.
Download it. Flashback Twin Cities, this is Tom Osmond. We'll be back next Saturday here on KLBB Club 1220.